Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
We're going to start with chapter 11 and verse 1. I'll tell you what we like about the book of Hebrews chapter 11 is that it's about people of faith. You can look in the magazines at the newsagent and look for magazines that are about ideas, Economists and Business Review and things like that. And there will be a few magazines and you can go into Borders and there will be some people who will over the course of the week buy them. But if you really want to know what people are purchasing, it's People Magazine and Women's Magazine, and not just because Julia Gillard is on the front this time, but all the things are about people. We want to know what people are doing. And when the people on the news talk about news, we kind of listen a little bit. But when they get to the celebrities and the gossip, oh, our ears perk up, because people like people. And I think maybe that's why you like Hebrews chapter 11. It's about faith, which the whole book has been, but it's faith by people. So it's personalized. And we actually know some of these folk, and it gives us comfort. By faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and all the prophets who ... So it's an exciting chapter. It's full of people. And so we zoom in on characters. And boy, are they. These are real characters. Let's look at the introduction of the chapter, which is really a zoom in on the whole point that the apostle is giving us in this book. Now, faith is what we're talking about. You can almost see him saying, hey, we've been given all this intro. Now, after all that, now, faith is what we're talking about. And what is it? It's the guarantee. It's the assurance. It's the conviction. It is the absolute earnest money. It's the deposit. It's something you can radically count on. You see a little bud coming up? Hang in there. There's a tree coming. Everything you've seen, it's all about this one item we're talking about, which is not a nebulous faith or, hey, just believe, kind of like a Mickey Mouse, Walt Disney, just believe, Tinkerbell, and we'll all be fine. But a real substantive faith by which all these people, whom he's going to litanize and chronicle, not only went to church on Saturday, but lived their lives in harsh treatment, tough conditions. And so it's a faith that acts, not a faith that merely assents. There are faithful people who say, well, I've studied it, and it seems to make sense. And they have assented, they've agreed mentally with biblical truth. Fair enough, good, better that than be an argumentative person. On the heels of that, we need to say quickly, that's not all faith is. So some say they missed heaven by 18 inches because they have it mentally, but they don't have it in the heart. Of course, we point to the physical lub-dub heart. We really mean the kishkas, don't we? We really mean the guts, which is where all good Jewish life begins. Not the stomach, but we point to it here. Bowels of mercy, we talk of. It's right here in the gut. And when you do something wrong, you feel it right in your gut. And when you love, it really starts there. That's where it is. So let's live there.
Is that where the seat of the emotions are?
It really is. The kidneys were the seat of the emotions back in some cultures. We've translated it to heart. It sells better on Valentine's than bowels. Faith emanates from that innermost being, and it is substantive. It's real. It is conviction. It's evident. It's guaranteed. It's not something that you have to wonder, hope I believe enough. If you believe, you've got enough. And if you don't believe, you'll never have enough. It really is something you just have. And what is it? It's something that people hope for, which is future tense, but it's now. And in the book that we've been recommending, the book by Derek Prince, Foundational Truths, he writes a lot about faith and uses this text to really unpack a lot more about faith to live by. Really quite good. You know, when you're 16 years old and you're a girl and you're waiting for the boy to call you on a Saturday or Friday afternoon, I hope he's going to call me and invite me to the dance. And then it's Sunday and he never called. you'd think that's hope dashed. But that's not biblical hope. Hope is an anchor for our soul. It's a guarantee. So here the apostle writes that faith is what makes everything I've been hoping for fixed. So everything that was, I hope it's going to, maybe it is. There's in music a seventh chord that leads me to, I hope maybe this thing will culminate, ba-ba-bum, and then it hits the tonic and you're back and you can finish the whole concert. Last night I went to see Wicked. I thought the dancing was ordinary, but the singing was fantastic. And the libretto is great. Stephen Schwartz, he knows how to write. And it was a decent musical in so many ways. But boy, when those people finished the song and the orchestra, the maestro was doing his wand, and then you could just see him holding the wand high and then drop it down for the final beats. And you knew that the song was concluded. The light did its kind of strobing and everybody broke into applause. At the end of that song, there's a conclusion to the aspiration that a song brings you. And when it gets to the end, it's not, oh, good, finally, that's over, but, ah, that's culminating. There's something satisfying about that. You think all day about a good dinner you're going to have. Oh, Jane's going to cook a fine meal. You're thinking about it all day. And then you come home in the Arvo and you smell it. Oh, there's some nice food cooking, but you haven't eaten anything. It's just hoped for. It's a hope that's going to be, you know it's going to be. It's not a wishful thinking because you walk by a bakery and that's not yours. This is in your home. This is your pumpkin soup or stew being made. This is good. I shouldn't talk like this at 6 o'clock, but you get the idea. There's a hope. You haven't had it yet. But then at 7:30 when you get home, you put that, there's satisfaction, isn't there? That's the feeling that I get as the apostle writes now. Faith is everything. It's evidence. It's assurance. It's the guarantee. It's everything we've hoped for and we didn't see. It's enough for me. And yet, there's going to be more. That's what's fantastic about this. Faith, by which I live today, is evidence of something that I've hoped for, but I'm yet hoping for. Look what happened to Abraham. Look what happened to Noah. Look what happened to Abel and all these fellas. They lived their life in faith, anticipating. They never got what they hoped for. None of them. They had the smell of the soup, but they never got to eat it. But it was still enough that they lived lives full of God. Pretty remarkable. Why do I know they didn't get it? That's what the last verse will tell us. So, by it, the men of old, and we should say men and women of old, gained approval. In fact, verse 6, which you ought to memorize. I don't know, have they told you to memorize Bible verses yet? Well, I am. Memorize Bible verses. This is one standard. You've got to know Hebrews 11:6. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. For those who come to God must believe that he is, and is a rewarder of those who diligently, our version says, seek him. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. I think the thing that people really want the most in life is to please and be pleased. Have a relationship that's pleasurable, and both in giving pleasure and receiving pleasure. End of the day, you can make more money. You can have a bigger boat. You can have a hole-in-one. All those things good if they give you pleasure. But really what things give you pleasure is satisfying someone else. The greatest pleasure you can ever receive is pleasing someone else. And when you summarize relationships, it comes down to how do we relate to the Almighty? Well, I want to give him pleasure. So you get religions. And what do religions try to do but please the deity? Satisfy the demands of the deity, whoever and whatever it is, or all the deities. And you get fear that I haven't pleased the deity. But here's the one way, the only way, you can ever please God. Faith. That's how it works. That's the only way it's ever worked. Now, faith leads to actions. Obviously, faith is not only mental assent. It's from the Kishkas, and it acts out in your life. He backs up. He starts with creation and then zooms through the book of Genesis and really zooms through Exodus and then Joshua, Judges, Kings, we'll get to it. So he starts with creation. By faith, we understand. You will never believe because you understand. You will only understand because you believe. By understanding, we believe. Nope, it doesn't say that. It says by faith, we can understand. We do understand. We understand. Why? That the worlds were prepared, created by the Word of God. Psalm 33 says he spoke and the world was. Genesis 1 says he spoke and it was. It's God who spoke and it was. And remember my surprise. Not that it took so short a time, but I wonder why it took so long a time to create the world. Why did it take him 6 whole days? He spoke. It was. God spoke, and it was. He prepared it by the word of God so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. What do we call that in Latin? Creation, creato ex nihilo, out of nothing. And it is a standard biblical argument that people have. Was the earth created from something? Was there a cosmic soup, protozoic soup, that spawned the dinosaurs, that spawned the other reptiles, that spawned the amphibians, that spawned... Last weekend, I was in Darwin with my wife. Oh, it was fun. We went to Crocodilus Park. What a hoot. It's a nice little zoo. And Patty held this one-year-old, maybe meter-long crocodile, and he's got teeth that could really hurt, so they tape it, for which I was grateful. She was really grateful. But they talk about, oh, it was 400 million years ago when the crocodiles were formed, and I think, out of what? And they just say it so matter-of-factly, as if we should all believe that things grew out of this soup. What was the silly book in the 70s?
It was, Big Bang Theory?
Well, the Big Bang is much more sensible. There was a book called From Goo to You by Way of the Zoo. I like that book. And it was kind of panning the idea of scientific Darwinianism. And here I was in Charles Darwin's, all right, he never made it to Darwin, but the Beagle made it there in Darwin. And Patty's holding this crocodile and we're shooting and they've got 10,000 crocs in this one farm of just a few acres. It's amazing. And they mostly breed them for shoes and handbags. I don't know if you'd like that. But when they just made a matter-of-fact statement about the age of the earth and the age of crocs, and everybody's just kind of nodding, and I think, no, that's not it. God spoke, and it was. Remarkable. You can't know that unless you believe it. By faith, we understand. Ex nihilo. Verse 4, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain. Some people will remember that story, Cain and Abel, and they brought sacrifices. You remember that Cain killed Abel. Do you remember why? Cain and Abel both brought sacrifices. The Bible says here that Cain's was lesser than Abel's. It was not as good a sacrifice. You think, well, a sacrifice is a sacrifice. Who cares? You know, let somebody bring something. If you guys all brought a sacrifice to God tonight, whatever it would be, 10% of your income from today, maybe that's how you think. Maybe an animal, maybe your next door neighbor you want to get rid of. You know, whatever it is, somehow we bring something, a piece of clothing, a $12 jumper, you know, whatever it is, we're bringing something. We want to offer it to God. How could one be better than another? I've heard that statement that Cain brought from the fields and Abel brought a blood sacrifice, that Abel brought a sheep and that that was therefore better because it was blood. In fact, I might have taught that once. But the issue here is not what, but with what? Faith. By faith, he brought a better sacrifice. It's because of what was going on internally, not externally. You want to bring a bag of grapes or a bag of chips? You want to bring a bag of blood? At issue in those days, as in these days, is not the what, but the heart. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts, and through faith. Though he's dead, he still speaks. It's really the faith of Abel that caused his sacrifice to be more welcome than the sacrifice that Cain brought. And you've got to read the whole Bible in context or else, yeah, you might see the sheep versus the fruit of the ground in one way or another. Though he's dead, he still speaks. What does that mean? How can somebody speak though he's dead?
By his actions.
His recorded action. So the book of Genesis records it for us, and therefore he still speaks. Yeah, we're going to see that in contrast to the blood in just a moment, the blood of Yeshua, which still speaks. In other words, in chapter 1 of the book of Hebrews, he talked about God's word coming to us now through Yeshua, his final word. Though he had spoken before through prophets, now he's speaking again. Remember, audible stuff is more important than visible stuff in kingdom life. All the other religions of the world major on visibility. All the other religions say you've got to see it. See the idol. Bow to the idol. There's action towards a seen thing. We have hearing from an unseen thing. That's the difference in our religion versus really all the other religions of the world. We have to hear, not see. We talked about it last week in the boring of the ear. Boring, not how you feel right now. The carving out of the ear in Psalm 40. That's how God makes us to be listeners. Shema Yisrael. He makes us listen to who he is. Okay. So that's why he still speaks is such a valid and critical term in this book. Enoch, verse 5, was taken up, meaning ascended, right in front of whoever he was with. And he received a testimony. He received a witness. He obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. God took him. God just took him. Who was Enoch? This is early Genesis. He's just a man listed there, and he was not, for God took him. That's all it says. We really don't know. That's all it says. He walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. It doesn't say taken to heaven. It just says taken up.
Elijah had the fig tree.
He was taken up. We don't know where they went. Locationally, we don't know. Could be Tamworth. Go up over and drop in Tamworth. They might still be there. Might be in Darwin. They're old up there. I don't know. Port Macquarie, great place to retire. I just don't know where he is. But what we do know is that he obtained a witness. He obtained a testimony. He was now a witness, able to be called onto the witness stand in this hall of fame or hall of faith that we have listed here. And then verse 6, let's see if we've memorized it. Without faith, let's say it together. And without faith, it's impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. It's a good one. Seek him with all your heart. Without faith, it's impossible. With faith, it's the only way. So how binary is that? You want to please God? Have faith. You don't want to please God? Do whatever you want to do. Just don't believe. Simple. So simple. Not only that God is, but that God rewards those who seek him. And then he's going to list all these people who've sought God and who've believed God and who've lived as if they were seeking him. And he keeps running the list. Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and then gives certain reasons why they are listed in this hall of faith. Fantastic stuff. Noah, what did he do? He built an arky-arky. That's right. And his building of the ark is faith. Why is that faith? Because it had never rained before. Today is one soggy day in Sydney. Whenever somebody's listening to this online, you know, they're thinking it's hot in Tampa, Florida, and it hasn't rained in a week, right? And I'm saying it's soggy out. Well, if you'd been in a place where it, like the desert, like the Simpson Desert, where it hasn't rained in 7 years, or 10 years, I think I heard. And then you say, I think I'm going to build a boat. People around you are going to think you're an idiot. Even though there has been a naval something in the Simpson. Hasn't there been discovery of fossils in the Simpson Desert? There are sea animals. There's marine life fossils in the Simpson Desert. Go figure that one out without a belief in a flood. Good luck, Charlie. But if you're in the Simpson and you're somebody who hasn't seen a news report, maybe you're an Aborigine, and it's been 10 years since the last drip of rain, and all of a sudden you get this word, I'm going to build a boat. People look at you like you're from, you know, outer space or Kansas or something. You know, this is too bizarre. Why would you build a boat? It's not going to rain. And if it does rain, it's okay. We can just walk to our huts or we can climb up a tree. But that's what Noah did. And it had never rained before. They had no experience of that. It had never flooded before. He says, it's going to flood. I'm going to build a boat. I say, what's a boat?
It hadn't rained before. How would Noah even know what rain is?
He didn't know. All he knew is that God told him it was going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights and build an ark and bring the animals and go for bark and put it, cover it with pitch and do the stuff. And so he's believing God enough to obey in light of recriminating mockery that was sure to come from others. And that's going to be a theme throughout all these. These guys had to believe no matter what, in spite of all the circumstances of life that were going to surely come upon them. We don't know about Enoch and what those were. We do know that Cain and Abel, when Abel's sacrifice was regarded, that Cain killed him. So there was immediate consequence to having a faith-filled life, though Abel wasn't aware of the consequence when he brought the sacrifice. Noah was warned by God about things not yet seen, and in reverence prepared that ark for his own household, by which he condemned the world. That's harsh, isn't it? World, if you don't get in, I'm condemning you. He wasn't doing that to condemn them, but by the which he did condemn them. You hear the difference? In the same way, look, you believe in Yeshua, you go to heaven. By the which you're condemning the world. Now, you're not saying, I condemn you, world. You're saying, if you don't get in the ark, you're gone. Your history. So we've made a good choice. We've walked into the ark of salvation by the which we condemn the world. You see the difference? We're not trying to do it to condemn them. And he became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. That's all we know of Noah. Lots of other things happened to him. He lived hundreds of years. But all we really know is he built an ark. We don't talk about the rainbow. We don't talk about getting drunk. We don't talk about the three sons. That's it. We just talk about the ark. Because this is the chapter that zooms in on the moments of faith in a faithful life. Abraham, when he was called, obeyed, leaving, not knowing where he was going. His first act of faith was saying goodbye to family. Those of us who are Jewish and believers, we know this, don't we? The pain of having family say, you're not one of us anymore. And by faith, we have to abandon them. It's harsh. It's harsh treatment. And yet, it's faith. It's what faith does. Abraham, we know the story of the idol, and he put the club, the hammer, in the hand of the idol, remember? His father comes home and says, what happened here? He said, well, that idol killed all the other idols. And the father said, you idiot, in whatever kind of Hebrew word he said. That can't happen. Don't you know it's just made of wood and stone? And Abraham said, if it's just made of wood and stone, why do you worship it? And that's when Abraham left. That's a legend. It's a Talmudic story. It's a good story. It's not in the Bible, but it's a good story. Whatever it is that prompted his departure, we know it's Genesis 12. God says, Abraham, lech lecha, get up and go. And he got up and left. So it's, again, the word of God coming to Abraham, Abraham taking it on board. End of the day, you really want to know what faith is? It's saying yes to God's word. That's all it is. It's God spoke, and I say, okay. It's not I have to drum up something. It's agreeing with God. When he was called, he obeyed. He went to a place he was going to receive for an inheritance. There's that theme again. Not getting it. I'm going to something ahead. He went out. He didn't know where he was going. He didn't have a map. Burke and Wills had not mapped out the Fertile Crescent. And then he lived as an alien. So he not only left everything he knew as home, he then continued to live as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. Here's that theme. We're promised, it's not yet. The musician's conductor's hand is up, it's not yet down. It's not yet fulfilled. He was looking for the city, looking. He was going forward. I love that gerund. He's looking. He's not yet there. That's the way the apostle is telling all Hebrew Christians, Jewish believers, the book is written to them, to me, to us, to say, keep going. Live by faith. You haven't got it yet, so cop the harsh treatment of others. That's how he ended chapter 10. Hang in there, you're going to cop it. And in chapter 6, he talked about those who receive an inheritance. Hang in there. And he's giving us physical, real examples through Jewish history of people who've had to do that. Therefore, you can do that. You see it? 11:11, Twin Towers. Sarah herself received ability to conceive. What's that about? 90-year-old lady having a baby. Give me a break. I mean, that would make the news.
What really happened? Did Sarah really conceive?
Yep.
As in a virgin?
No, she wasn't a virgin. She'd gone through menopause.
But how did you conceive at such an age?
By faith. It was like the virgin birth. It doesn't say that here. But it was prototypic of that, in that someone who's beyond time still has an egg, and the sperm still came. So Abraham was still active. They still had a little romance there in the tent, okay? If it were truly the virgin birth, then Abraham would not be involved. But that's not ever spoken of. It is not the way it is.
But maybe the women had menopause in 100
years. Well, maybe, but in Sarah's case, she's beyond the age. That's what Genesis says. Well, be careful on saying miracle. Miracle is when an egg happens and becomes a zygote without a sperm. That's a miracle. When a sperm and an egg hang out together, that's not a miracle. It's like a miracle. I'm okay with that, to say it's like one, but it's not a miracle. You see, because it's natural function of both items.
It seems the impossible, but it's possible, huh?
Okay, and why is it possible? Because of faith.
But it wasn't just
that. She laughed. She laughed and then she went on back into the tent. So there was yes and there was no. We hear the laughter. That's why Isaac is so named. But there was faith. And that's why she's so clarified here. Look, in Jewish history, when you bless a woman, lay your hands on her and say, may you be like Sarah. First one out of the hat. Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. She's still the mother of all the faithful. Why? Because she had faith. Now, if you only read Genesis and only stopped at the, she laughed, Selah, you might think, oh, Well, she's not very faithful. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, the rest of the books on Jewish tradition, and certainly the book of Hebrews, calls on Jewish tradition. We'll see that in a minute.
Well, Hagar is a fiction.
Well, she did some other things. Look, doesn't mean they're perfect.
Because she got Abraham to go with Hagar. Well,
that was 13 years earlier. Well, it does seem strange, and yet faith, which is how she learned to live. Look, she left home too. She was there in Ur of the Chaldees and left with Abram, not knowing where she was going. We commend Abraham for that, and yet she tagged along. Now, to be fair, she didn't have a whole lot of rights compared to a modern woman. And yet, there are scenes where people pulled out. I mean, you see Zipporah later on, who throws foreskins at Moses, and you're a creature of blood. She didn't want to hang out with him. You see other women of the Bible who don't necessarily cooperate with their husbands. I think Sarah's a strong woman, and the Bible commends her. We ought to as well. By faith, Sarah. Even Sarah herself received ability to conceive. How? By faith. Why, she considered him faithful who had promised. There's that theme. The promise fulfilled. Promise fulfilled. For Sarah, it was through Abram, through your seed, the world will be blessed. So Abram said, honey, guess what God told me today? We're going to have a kid, and I'm going to have like the stars of the sky and the sand of the sea. And she looked at him like, what are you, nuts? I'm 75 years old. What, are we going to run an adoption agency? Her first response is negative, but in due time, she believed that very promise and acted on it. Acting on it is faith. Don't miss it. Therefore, verse 12, born of that one man, and him as good as dead at that. What does that mean? He's an old geezer. That's right. He's 100 years old. That's as good as dead. That doesn't mean he is dead, but as good as dead. And then many descendants, stars of heaven in number, innumerable as the sand by the seashore. Wow. That's a fulfillment of biblical proportions. All these died in faith without receiving the promises. They didn't get everything. They got some things. Abraham didn't get everything. He got a few kids, okay? Abel didn't get everything. He got the promise. He got accepted, and then he got killed. Noah didn't get everything. He survived the flood, and then he had some trouble with his kids, and then, you know, a few things. They all died again. They all died anticipating the fulfillment of their faith that they did not yet receive. But having seen them and welcomed them from a distance, there's that idea of Abraham leaving again from a distance, and having confessed they were strangers and exiles. For those who say such things make it clear they're still seeking, diligently seeking a country of their own. Because if they'd been thinking of that from which they came, then they could have gone back. Wow, verse 15 is so important for Jewish believers. This theme that's throughout the book of Hebrews of don't go back. Don't go back to Messiah-less Judaism. Just because it's got a Jewish star doesn't make it full of Messiah. Just because people wave a flag and sing a minor key song doesn't make it authentically Jewish. Make it Messiah full, not Messiah-less. And the apostle here will take you and go with you. The arguments continue through this book. And for those who've been listening for 11 chapters now, they know, you know, as you're listening, okay, Mendelssohn, I heard you. You've been pounding this, that going back to a Judaism without Yeshua is empty and void. By faith, we're going forward. Don't think about it. Otherwise, you could go back to it. That's what verse 15 says. And it goes beyond that. Obviously, you can take this not just for Judaism, but for those of you who've had experiences with wrong behavior in the world. And there are so many anonymous clubs. You know, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's Narcotics Anonymous, and all these other things. Sexual Offenders Anonymous. I'm sure there's all kinds of people, things that people call addictions. Whatever it is, one of the first things you have to do in all those groups is to confess that you're not going back there. You're not going back. You're going forward. And you're helpless to avoid it, except for your higher power. Now, you and I, who sit in this classroom, know that our higher power is Yeshua. And without him, we would go back. So here's what he says. Keep your head on straight and keep your eyes going forward. You know, your body is designed this way. Your ears, your eyes, your feet, your hands, everything about you is designed to be unidirectional. You cannot go in two directions very long. Forward, back, left, right, you just can't do that. Your body tears in half. He's saying, keep your eyes going forward. Verse 15 says, they would have had opportunity to return if they'd been thinking of that from which they came out. The only reason to talk about that from which you came is to say, thanks be to God. and maybe to help someone else who's in that situation. But now we're going forward. Verse 16, as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. We're going to see the heavenly versus the earthly in a couple weeks. So God's not ashamed to be called their God, because he's sitting on the other side preparing a city. He's the senior craftsman. He's the one that we appealed to when we looked at the tabernacle a couple weeks ago. It's the design of the heavenly tabernacle, and now a heavenly city in which there is a heavenly tabernacle, where the King of Heaven, who is welcoming people, is residing. So keep your face forward, like Yeshua, when it says of him that he set his face like flint towards Jerusalem. He wasn't looking backwards. Oh, Bethlehem was pretty good. I liked Galilee. He set his face toward Jerusalem, where he was going to die. Verse 17, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. Now, we've already had one moment of Abraham. No, we've had two. No, we've had three. Okay, what have we had with Abraham? He left. What else did he do? He left, he lived, and he had sex with Sarah. That's faith, brothers. That's faith, sisters. He still believed. I'm not talking about a moment of pleasure after night on the town. I'm talking about believing that he's going to have a child. Pretty amazing. So now number four faith of Abraham, verse 17. When he's tested, he offered up Isaac. We know this story. It's called the Akedah, Genesis 22. He binds Isaac to the altar. Isaac's probably 30 years old at the time. That makes Abraham how old? 130. He is one old dude. He works out. He's offering up Isaac. He lays him on the altar. They walk a three-day journey up to the top of Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, which is where, by the way, the temple is later on. It's where the Western Wall still is, that area. And he walks up there, and he ties him to an altar, and they prepare the fire, and he's got the wood. And the son says, well, you've got everything, Dad. Where's the ram for the sacrifice? And he says, God's prepared a lamb. I mean, where's the lamb for the sacrifice? And he says, God has provided. God has provided. God has provided. But he couldn't finish the sentence, I'm sure. God has provided. Yahweh Yireh, Jehovah Jireh, you might know the song. But it was as he raised his hand up to slay his son, which is a matter that I'm going to have to talk to God about a lot when I get to heaven. What were you asking? How dare you ask somebody to slay his son? Don't ask me that. What's going through your mind, God, that you can do that? I've really got a list of questions. This is one of them.
Yeah, but then God offered his own son as a sacrifice.
That's certainly it.
How could he do that? That's a controversy.
It's terrible. As good as dead, now he's got the child. He's his promise. He's his only inheritance. Through him has to come the seed of the world, the sand and the stars. And now, I tell you what, I'm going to kill it. Offering up his only begotten son. That's pretty shocking, isn't it? Because he's already had another one, whom he loved. What was his name?
Ishmael.
Yeah. So in Genesis 22, take your son, he says, I've got two. Your only son, he says, I've got two only sons, one from Hagar, one from the one whom you love. He says, I love them both, even Isaac, the scripture says. God's clarifying it to Abraham so he doesn't take the wrong son, the son of promise. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your seed will be called, your descendants will come. So why? Verse 19, he, Abraham, considered. This is how his faith acted. Consider that God is able to raise men even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. A type is something that's a foreshadowing of something future. We've talked about kol v'chomer, from the lesser to the greater, and allegory is another biblical way of interpreting. So it's a type. Yeshua dying on the cross is the antitype of this, which is the type. So it's the fulfillment, but it's not really a promise like a prophecy, like your child will be born on Thursday. That would be a prophecy. A type is merely a shadow of something yet to come. I think we have a book on types and shadows in the Old Testament. It's pretty good. Joseph can be, you can see typology in it, and I think in the book they even do that. But I'm more comfortable with only those things that are listed as types. We've seen the heavenly tabernacle as an antitype of the earthly tabernacle. But when we start getting into everything can mean something, then I get nervous. It's just me. But there are plenty of teachers out there who would say Joseph was a type. And I actually have taught, and I think if you go to the iTunes listening online, or those of you here can get my Genesis studies on Joseph, and I've got a list of 37 similarities between the life of Joseph and the life of Yeshua. They're not random. It's pretty rife. And yet I get uncomfortable saying it's a type. because it's not listed here. Shadows will work for me, yeah. But a type, I just guard the term. So I love verse 19, and it's a symbol. It's so good for us as Jews, because we all know the story of the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. And it seems so harsh. And here the apostle is saying that because Abraham believed that God would raise him from the dead, he went ahead and was going up the altar. I was going to slay a son. Where do we read that Abraham believed that he could raise him from the dead? Where do we read that in Genesis? Genesis 22, and it's in verse number 5, and it's one Hebrew letter. At the end of verse 5, what we say, 22:5f, Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the lad, we will go yonder. We will worship v'nashuva, and we will return aleichem to you. Nashuva, we will return. It's from the one little Hebrew letter, nun. Because of the nun, meaning we will return. Abraham believed that God was able to bring Isaac back. That's how we read it. We will return. Now, he's either lying to the servants or deluding himself or believing God. He's believing God. And that's what the author picks up, that Abraham believed that Isaac would return with him. As a result, he believed that God was able to raise him from the dead. That, the symbol of a resurrected Isaac, didn't resurrect. He didn't resurrect. Why? Because he didn't die. But that whole picture of the climbing up the mountain, the son with the wood on his back, the slaying of the son, his only begotten son, as you said, is so symbolic of Jesus that it's impossible to miss. And then the resurrection, which is the antitype of the we will return. Does that make sense now?
Yeah.
So back to Hebrews. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau regarding things to come. Verse 20, that's the switching of the hands and the blessing that they bargained for. That's the one you were remembering. Jacob, as he was dying right at the end of his life, blesses each of the 12 sons. He worships. He leans on the top of his staff. That's so cool. What a visual of an old guy blessing all 12 sons. And there's a tribal, do you see the 12 tribes on the ark? Do you see that kind of banner we have up there? Those characterize the 12 tribes, and we have several of those. I really like the study of the 12 tribes. The author here is alluding to them without defining them, because he assumes the Hebrew believers will already know them, and that he's blessing some and in a way cursing some, but that's what a daddy does. By faith, he saw the future. And then it ends with Joseph, verse 22, when he's dying, makes mention of the Exodus, though it had not happened yet and would not happen for hundreds of years. And he gave orders that when you leave Egypt, though here we are, to take me back and bury me back there. That's all by faith from Abel, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. The book of Genesis is filled with testimonies. Don't miss it, brothers. Don't miss it, sisters. Live by faith today, because without faith, it's impossible to please him. Those who come to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek, acting upon what God has said as if it had already happened.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact us at Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia, 2001. God bless you.